Welcome to You Are an IP Company podcast with Carrie Oberbrunner and Katie Rubino. Our passion is helping entrepreneurs publish, protect, and promote their intellectual property. This podcast is sponsored by Instant IP and Caldwell. And now, get ready for You Are an IP Company.
Katie, we're back talking about James Bond. And I'll be honest, I'm not a huge fan and never got into it, but evidently people are into it because it's making headlines all over the place. You and I did a quick search and it's a deep thing. But I think the topic today is, Katie, that a fiction series is being fought over by one of the richest people in the world. So why do you think James Bond and other fiction type genre has so much valuable IP to it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think a lot of it comes down to the fame and the recognition associated with it.
Yeah.
When those movies first came out, they really gained a lot of notoriety. And I think it was a different time too than today where, you know, there's 10 new movie releases every day. But back, you know, in the 60s and 70s, right, it was much more staged and going to the movies was a big deal. So I think there's just this unbelievably huge consumer following and recognition for the brand. And I mean, the fact that it's so many years later and they still make these movies in the series that are very popular, I think that speaks to how much consumers really appreciate it. The following of it too.
So it's almost like I hear you talking about like nostalgic. It's got like a memory, like maybe, oh, you saw that movie as a kid with your dad, you know,
right.
Your dad's passed and now you have this affinity to it. It's like this valuable memory almost.
Right. But I think too, a lot of it is also the storylines of the James Bond character too. He's always fighting evil and he's always trying to do good. And I think that's something people really like and can really appreciate too.
Wow. So it like taps into this larger story that we all feel like we're caught up in.
Right. And they're, you know, they're always, those movies are always kind of thrilling and the scenery is always, they're always set, you know, like somewhere.
Cars.
Yeah. Italy with fast cars. Yeah. It's fun to just watch it.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're onto something too, because some of these other headlines we just saw about the movie, a director, at least I caught just a bit, but it's like a director is now quitting because Amazon owns the IP. And that even says something. Like, I think that says something about this director. Sure, he might think he doesn't want to sell out to Amazon maybe, but the other thing is he might think, I no longer get to control the IP the way I saw directing the movie. And now there's going to be some oversight to it, which is going to limit my creative license with IP. I mean, that, what do you think about that? Even, you know, other characters, Winnie the Pooh, these types of things where if you give up the IP, they can take it in places that the creator might not have intended.
Right. No, I agree with that, because with the selling of the IP rights comes also then this sort of, you know, lack of control from the director as to how it might be implemented, right? Because Amazon might have certain policies and procedures in place and certain restrictions and content that they want. So I think it's with that sale comes kind of a tightening of control. And so for some directors too, they might not like to give up that creative license. And so it can be a tough sell there too.
Well, and that's even, I mean, we're weeks away from the Disney Snow White, you know, and you have, right? I mean, you have, oh my gosh, I think it's only going to get crazier, but you've seen little hints of this left and right and, you know, woke version, non-woke version. I mean, regardless of any film you create, if you take it from a cartoon to real life, just like we saw with The Little Mermaid, there's going to be, you know, separation from the original. Right. But then, yeah, sometimes now you're seeing like, wait, Snow White used to like being swept off her feet, and now it's woman power, and like it's becoming a thing, and I think it's only going to get crazier in the next month. But let's talk about that IP, because you remember the original IP, but there is shifts. You even see this when I visited the Dr. Pepper Museum. It's like the original Dr. Pepper versus today. I mean, it's shifted.
Right. Yeah. And I think too, it's interesting because a lot of times too, there's a shifting of the IP that goes along with the invention or the, you know, what's at the center of the IP. So for example, take, I think we talk about this in our book, KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Yeah.
If you track what their original trademark looked like,
yes,
and what their original intention was versus what it is today, and just over time, there's this shift. And I think it's a natural course of business too, that the first product you launch with, is that ever really your front runner?
Mm.
Most of the time, no. Something new comes along, or there's a change from what you originally focused on. And so there's always expansion. And it's interesting to see how the IP tracks, and also too, just how the IP strategy follows too. I think we've seen this a lot, especially in the patent space, where, you know, companies used to not invest a lot of money and assets into IP patents. And then with the technological boom of the 90s and 2000s, now there's so many investments into it. And it's, so it's, there's always something happening over time that, you know, we're always kind of tracking and catching up with too.
Yeah. Well, even I, you know, again, these are, I have my diehard products that I like, which are a little strange, like my smoothie and stuff, but but Coke Zero, you know, in the new Coke.
Yeah.
You saw this years ago where I think it was, wasn't it called like New Coke or something? And I think it didn't, I mean, people can fact check me, but I thought like people didn't like it. So then they came back with like the original. You know, in other words, there are times where the Mustang car has shifted and some people like the new IP and some people hate it. And then you see some companies returning, and even Jaguar a few months ago when they came out with this new IP strategy of branding, and they got lit up because people are like, I'm not going that way. So as an IP lawyer, do you ever advise people with the shifting of IP and like, you know, hey, we want you to be creative and innovative, but you still have Legos, you know, Legos right. might have minifigures. They might have a partnership with Harry Potter, but it's still Legos. Like, how do you balance that?
Yeah, it's interesting because it's always a moving target.
Mm.
And especially if, let's say, it's a company is looking to do maybe a whole rebrand, right? Mm. That's going to be sort of one IP strategy versus maybe it's a relaunch of a product too, but maybe there's a change to the product. So how do we update the IP to kind of capture that change?
Mm.
And there's a lot of different ways you can do that. So it's always a moving target, and you want to make sure kind of your business strategy and your IP strategy are in alignment, because when those don't really mesh up well together, that's where things can go off course quickly.
Wow. I could see that. Yeah. So it is, it's like this tipping your hat to tradition, but also being innovative. And sometimes you get out too far. I'm trying to think of a brand that became innovative and it actually was good. You know, like I mean, you could almost look at every brand. Apple's getting a little bit of heat because Steve Jobs used to be very innovative and introduced these new products that were absolute winners. But lately, Apple, you know, with the goggles, I mean, that's a big shift to get people to catch on with that new IP. So, and then I think there's kind of a mockery today of like the new iPhone. It has, it has a new button. You know, like in other words, right. their new updates have not been that big. So, what do you think about some brands that almost need to become a little bit more innovative with their IP?
Right. I think there is a real balance because you don't want to get to a point where your product offerings are kind of stale, where it's the same stuff you've been selling for 50 years, right?
Yeah.
Because then your ability to really grow, gets harder and harder to attract new people on board. But you don't want to also, the case of Apple, right, grow with these innovative technologies so quickly that then you've sort of outpaced yourself to offer new product offerings. So it's always a balancing act. And I think you have to find some middle ground there to really get to a place where you can offer new products, you're protecting the IP, and there's sort of still a lot of excitement around the brand too.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah. I like that. So, but you know, let's even take one of my favorite bands, U2. I follow them for years, and I would say that they're a brand that, and then they're an IP brand, IP company that they had their beginning ones, you know. Boy was their first album, and then they kind of had these classic Joshua Tree, like With or Without You, but then they come up with this U2 pop.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it was different. This was like Mysterious Ways and you know, all these different types of songs. And there were some people who said, I'm done with this band. You know, forget it. Like, we don't want your new stuff. And I think bands have to deal with that. And then they kind of came back to their original and maybe attracted the haters. But you do see this with Taco Bell.
Yeah.
You know, and my kids like certain, I forget, they like one thing from Taco Bell and then Taco Bell discontinues it. But then they come back and it's this big marketing, the return of whatever. So it is interesting how they're using IP to get new clients, retain new clients. I think that would be like, that'd be a book too.
Yeah, I think so. Well, and how they too, like these older brands totally pivot to new product line offerings to really attract younger generations too.
Interesting.
And kind of try to get in the back pocket of Gen Z, right? And get them to be excited about the brand also. It's really fascinating to see it go full circle too.
I think one recent one would be Nike and Tiffany's.
Yep.
You know, and how Tiffany's, I mean, Tiffany's is in some Christmas carols, or not, you know, like Christmas songs from the, I remember that one always about Santa Baby. That's it. Santa Baby has a lyric in it about Tiffany's. And I mean, that was a long time ago. And now here, all of a sudden they're partnering with Nike.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a cool strategy. Well, Katie, I know we just wanted to hit this topic today of leading with James Bond, but talking about the legacy of IP and the shifting. And I think the point I would encourage listeners to evaluate today is like, what is your classic IP that you shouldn't change? And how are you bringing in new and innovative IP offerings and attracting new? So, Katie, I think we might need a part two on this someday.
I think so too. There's a lot to unpack here.
All right, folks. Well, listen, if you haven't gotten the book, literally my LinkedIn last night, somebody said, I'll read you this quick message. It says, this is true. It's a Douglas. I'm not going to say his last name. Thanks for connecting. I received your You Are an IP Company at my strategic coach workshop last month. What an amazing book. I can't wait to start using Instant IP to protect our ideas and our business.
That's awesome.
There you go. All right, folks, have a great day. We'll see you.
Thank you for listening to You Are an IP Company podcast with Carrie Oberbrunner and Katie Rubino. Visit instantip.today and caldwelllaw.com for more help on your IP journey. Remember, your ideas are valuable. Protect them today.